Welcome to Rewatchable, episode number 280. Today we'll be discussing Sense8, season 1, episode 10, What is Human? My name is Danielle, and with me I have kind of a surprise guest, in that you wouldn't think he'd be on, but I have our super fan, my fellow super fan and host, Mitch, and we also have newbies, Caitlin and Brittany. Hello, everybody.
Hi.
Hi.
That was a great introduction. Thank you, Danielle.
You're welcome. Well, I feel like neither of us were around last week, and now Everybody's getting like a second helping or a double dose of us, for better or for worse.
Yes, for sure.
All right. So before we start, I just want to give you all the information on how to contact us because we love it when you do that. So you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at re_watchable. And you can also come find us on Tumblr at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. The only other thing I wanted to throw in here is we're now also on Podchaser. It's like a cool index podcast where you can like rate and review different episodes, different podcasts. So if you want to check us out there, we're at podchaser.com/rewatchable. So before we start today, before we get into this episode, which I forgot how much I loved this episode, so I'm super excited. Let's get you used to the sounds of our voices with some fun facts. So let's see. Mitch, would you like to go first?
Sure. So my fun fact is that I am super duper enjoying the new Spider-Man PS4 game, which is great because I didn't think I was going to, because I even wrote a feature on this saying like there are too many Spider-Man things forever, but it still somehow finds a way to be amazing. And I'm so happy because I was afraid I was going to be stuck reviewing a game, playing it all weekend and whatever, just pumping hours into it and hating it. But it's not boring. It's not the same. It's still really exciting. And I'm like, yes, thank God.
Good. I'm glad you're not wasting your time.
And same.
And that it's not just like a generic sort of next one in line for Spider-Man games.
Yeah, no, totally.
That there was like a limited edition. What is this, a PS4 game?
Yeah, it's a PS4 exclusive.
And there was like a limited edition like Spider-Man PS4. I saw someone like playing the game and they got that and that looked really cool.
Yeah, it does look really pretty. It's a good collector's item, I'm sure.
Well, yay. I'm glad you are enjoying it.
Me too.
Caitlin, do you have a fun fact for us this week?
So, not going to talk about the Falcons because that was horrific. So, I'm just going to say that the Braves are still doing well and they were supposed to not be good this year and they're still in the playoff hunt. So, I'm just going to enjoy my baseball.
Hey, there you go. While you still can, right?
Exactly.
And Brittany, what about you?
My fun fact could be football related. So, Tom Brady doesn't play for another day, so you'll know the result as you're listening to this podcast. But Tom Brady was giving an interview this week, and his son is old enough now to be participating in fantasy football. And when asked who his quarterback was, he said that it is Matt Ryan. So
what?
Yeah. Not your old dad.
Sorry, Dad.
Hey, the Falcons quarterback for those.
That's my quarterback.
That is Caitlin's quarterback.
So that is a fun fact.
Is working against his dad in fantasy. Mm.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. I love that. That's so funny. It's also weird to think about that, like, he has a son that's the age to play fantasy football.
Yeah. So my fun fact is actually Tom Brady's fun fact, but it's fine. I'll steal it from him.
So the last week or so, I have been absolutely obsessed and playing on repeat Troy Sivan's new album, Bloom, to the point where like I have had like solo dance parties by myself to this album. Or sometimes my brain will get a little down and like sometimes happy things make it worse. Like watching Sierra Burgess last night was not a great idea. But even though this album is like super happy, it's been keeping me like really light. And so I've just been listening to it on repeat, and it's been really good for my dance moves and for my mental health. So I don't know if anybody has listened to it, but I love it, and I'm obsessed.
I'm A, sorry to hear that Sierra Burgess made you feel sad, because I'm looking forward to it. And
Adorable. It's adorable. Right. It's just my brain. It's fine.
Totally. No, I feel you there, because I feel like I'm going to be like, I love it. I love her. This is sad. I hate bullying movies, especially. Like God, they make you just so sad. But I'm really excited to listen to that album now that I've heard your recommendation on it. I think it's going to be really fun.
It's super like synth poppy and sensual, but also like upbeat and hopeful, and it's lovely. So if anyone else is listening to this album and wants to just like squeal about it, I'm here. Please come find me. All right. With that, let's get into this episode. Like I said, this is one that I actually forgot completely about and about how much I loved it. So I'm really excited to hear all of your thoughts, especially the newbies. But before we jump into our discussion, Mitch has written up a synopsis, and it reads, in this episode, blood packs were spit out and everyone's stunt actors had quite the workout. As Leto confronts Joaquin, Wolfie blows shit up with a rocket launcher, RIP Ice Diamonds. Sun's probably getting out, and Will is back on the fence about Jonas. Later, Riley goes all Stranger Things at her dad's recital as all of the sensates remember their births, which is a thing that happens. So I want to actually jump around in our doc a little bit and start with, leave some of the more story intensive plot lines for after, but let's start with some of the ones that we don't see very much of. So let's start with Sun. So Sun, we get a little bit of, last week we saw her father actually come visit her in prison, which I know was a surprise to quite a few of us last week. And this week, her father's lawyer said that she could be out in less than a week. And Mitch put in here succinctly that basically June Key is fucked. So how are you guys feeling about this prison plotline, newbies? Is it moving too quickly? How do you feel about the lawyer being like, oh yeah, you'll be out in less than a week?
Well, I really liked the line last week where Sun, her father was like, I haven't slept since you've been in here. And Sun was saying how she's been having the best sleep since she's been in there. Mm-hmm. And I've actually enjoyed watching Sun in prison. So I am kind of disappointed that it's wrapping up this early, mainly because I think we're getting pure Sun. Like, you know, like this is what Sun is, because she doesn't have anyone around that she's like hiding behind. Yes, she's not like, you know, in the fighting ring, which is really cool, but she's like, you know, kicking some prisoners around and, you know, I don't know. So I'm really into watching her in prison. I think we're getting a good exploration of her character in the confinement of this place. And she also has the ability to escape from prison because of her connection with the others. So like, you know, she's watching fireworks and doing all sorts of stuff that's allowing her to not just focus on the fact that she is in prison. And I think it's just a really interesting way to tell someone's story and kind of forget at times that she is in prison.
I agree. I felt like it wasn't until she went to prison and started interacting with some of these other women that I started getting a grasp of who she is as a character. And I found her a lot more interesting and likable since she went into prison. I actually was expecting that scene with the dad to be a hallucination. So when the lawyer came in, I was like, oh, it was real. Okay. Because it was so out of the blue and so out of character for the dad that I was like, there's no way this is real. And then apparently it was. So that was very surprising to me.
Yeah, apparently it was. No, I think you guys made good points. It's almost like prison just kind of strips away everything, even some baggage that people might have. And so you are yourself in prison. The least like yourself that you would be is just like, it would be like you have like a fight or flight sort of aspect to your personality. Like you're on guard all the time, but everything else kind of falls away. So I do agree that we have been seeing more of just like how Sun interacts with people in relatively normal situations, or kind of how she just reacts to the world around her, where we didn't actually get that when she was out in the world. So yeah, that's kind of the only thing that was really happening with Sun. I don't really want to have either me or Mitch ring in on anything that's going on, because we'll find out what happens soon enough and how that kind of storyline goes. But it was nice to see her and kind of just pop in with Sun, especially since we haven't had a Sun intensive episode for 2 or 3 episodes, I think, at this point, something like that. So yeah, let's move on to Kala. and just quickly talk about the couple of scenes that we got with her in the hospital and her dad, because her dad is the absolute best. Mitch, I don't know about you, but when I was watching this episode and just like watching her dad, I forgot. I mean, I know how lovable he is, but I forgot how sweet and tender that moment is with him trying to give her advice or trying to help her work through her issue. How did you feel about watching that again?
Yeah, same. There are so many nice and sweet moments in the show that this is one of the more subtle ones that did stick out in my memory, but I was kind of happy for that because it kind of felt like I could re-experience it for the first time. It was really fun and very cute and very happy. I like him. I wish there were more cinnamon rolls. Like, I don't know her father's name off the top of my head, but Kala's father in the world. Yeah. They're very nice. Yeah. Those kind of people.
He's so lovely. And like, I found it really interesting that he was able to boil down her issues or like the things that she was juggling by just having Kala say that she's been unsure about the wedding for a while now. Like, she doesn't really give him anything else to go off of. And he is able to, by knowing his daughter so well, figure out, like, this is where she's starting. And so here's where her, like, thought processes are going. Newbies, how did you feel about, like, her dad intervening or, well, not really intervening, but, like, trying to help her in this way?
Ugh, I just felt like it was about time because yeah. You see Kala and in little snippets her relationship with her mother and her father, and I'm just like, I feel like if you tell them, they'll be okay, you know?
Yeah.
I wanted her to be able to go to them, but she is a proud woman. She wants to live up to the expectations that she thinks her parents have set for her, and she doesn't want to disappoint them. But at the same time, she just has these parents who probably wouldn't have cared. I mean, they probably would have cared a little bit, but, you know, not in a way that would, you know, expel her from the family in any certain way possible. So I just, this scene was so good. It was so nice. And her dad is the best.
He's adorable. I find Kala such a frustrating character because I want to like her a lot, but her problems are just so of her own doing. Like, like Brittany said, her parents are very clearly loving and they think that she wants to get married because it's a love match. Like, that's why they seem invested, because they think she is. And the fact that she's so hesitant about the whole thing is just very frustrating to watch. And then she gets dug deeper and deeper into these issues, and it's literally just her own issues. It's like, girl, say something. You're going to solve a lot of problems by using your words. And it's kind of frustrating.
I think you're bringing up an interesting point there, because everyone else has these problems that kind of aren't of their own doing, and hers very much is different from theirs. And it is really frustrating. And I think it's also really frustrating for me because I can see myself in a lot of that. Like, I am not coming up against prison time or like someone out to get me or anything like that. But I feel like my problems a lot of the time are of my own doing. And so it's sort of like, I get frustrated at Kala, and then it makes me think like, oh, well, you're kind of the same. Cut that out.
I could have sworn you were about to go to prison, Danielle. You're you're a bad person.
I am. I may or may not have murdered someone this week. It's fine.
Oh, hey.
Nobody will know. But yeah, so I really did. And I liked just seeing more of her dad. Her dad is absolutely wonderful. And I don't think any of us could ever say enough nice things about him. And it'll be interesting to see kind of, I think we have an idea of which way she's leaning in terms of her choice, because neither road is bad and both have their pros and cons, but I think we can kind of see which way she's leaning. So it'll be nice to see her actually make that decision instead of stew over it some more. But actually one of the ways in which she was kind of coming to terms with her decision or kind of mulling things over was through a visit with Cafius, which was super adorable. Basically, Kala goes and visits Cafius because they both have big decisions to make. And so that kind of brings them on a level with each other. And they have this really just sweet conversation. And Kala ends up asking him, like, you know, I've been to a house. I think she visited a small home in Bombay, she said. And she noticed that like they didn't have any beds, but they also had a big screen TV like Cafius did. And she was asking Cafius, like, why is a TV more important than a bed? And in true Cafius style, his answer was really simple, but really introspective. And Caitlin, I know that you love Cafius, and I know we didn't get a lot of him in this episode, but were you pleased with this scene and how much he was kind of affecting Kala?
I loved this scene. I thought it was adorable, and Cafius is always adorable and sweet, and I loved that response. I thought it was deep, this idea that the TVs take you out while a bed is something that would keep you in. And it shows that he is the type of person who wants so much more. And being a sensate clearly means like he's destined for more.
Mm-hmm.
But I just found this whole thing so lovely and so like genuine. Like this, his love for Van Damme is so genuine. It's so cute. He's just precious. And I thought this was a really lovely sequence. Like, he's just so into this whole connection with other people, and he doesn't take it for granted in any way, and he loves meeting all the people in his cluster and going all the places, and it's just, he's so delightful, and I just want to wrap him in bubble wrap and protect him
at all costs.
Yes. Such a cinnamon roll.
Yeah. Brittany, what did you think about this?
I really loved the line in general about explaining the escapism. And then it really like highlighted when Cafius was also watching the fireworks with Sun and Will. Just he now has this other means of escaping. And I think that that's just important to him. Every scene that we've seen him in where he's, you know, helping someone else, it's always because he's just there talking, like looking at and he's just so excited to take in something new. And like Caitlin said, he is a precious cinnamon roll. Like everything to him is just so new and exciting, and he wants to absorb every single moment of it. And if someone, like when he was talking to Sun that one time before she was about to go and turn herself in, you know, he's just like, you don't want to be bothered. That's fine. I'm just going to walk around here because I've never been here before and everything's cool with me. And I also really enjoyed the way he was describing the fight scenes of the Van Damme movie, because, you know, Kala was like, oh, does this have any dancing? And he's like, in a way, yes. And it just reminded me of like Hernando and how people see things very differently. He's very into the wrestling because it tells a story and it's got drama. And, you know, he's also, Cafius is seeing that in Van Damme. He's like, this is a beautiful dance of power and relinquishing power and getting power back. And it was, yes, it's violent, but it's telling a story in a way. And I just loved everything that came out of his mouth in this episode.
Yes. And I think Cafius's character, and this episode really highlights it, is even though he has these sort of like simple responses or very pure reactions to things, there are also just a lot of layers, and he is a great like philosopher in ways, and ways in which that you wouldn't really expect it from him. Like he doesn't live in like overly complicated society in terms of like, I don't even know what I'm trying to say, but like his society is very different from Sun's or even the Americans on this show. And so a lot of times, because we see it as different, we see it as maybe like simpler, but he understands more about the world than I think a lot of the other characters do, because he's able to kind of see these like pure facts about it, or just like kind of see connections between all these people. And you're right. People haven't really come to Cafius for his driving ability a lot. I think we've got the one with Nomi, and I can't remember any of the other ones. Whereas like other people will go to Wolfgang or Lido, or they get called on for very performative or very like physical things. Whereas Cafius is usually called on to kind of talk things out. And I really enjoy seeing that, especially when he has a lot of stuff going on in his life. Like he never lets that bleed into his conversations really with other people. And I think it's really great. So any other comments on Cafius besides the fact that we love him?
He's so cute.
He's so cute. Well, we will leave it at that then. And quick note, Nomi doesn't really have a lot to do in this episode aside from Amanita. And so we do get to see them kind of trying to get back to their normal life during the fireworks. They're cute. There's not much here to talk about. I don't know if anybody has anything that kind of stuck out to them about their time together.
It's a little
my pun.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that's Nomi. I didn't think we would really have much to talk about. Just kind of like she was in the episode, but not really.
Yeah, she had so much to do last week in her flashback that it felt like the character in us needed a break to recover.
Yeah, and I mean, it's always a balancing act. And I think they're, at this point, because all of the characters are very much interacting more, the balancing act is getting better, I think. It feels less isolated and feels like we're here and now we're going to go here and now we're going to go here, but they're kind of bleeding into each other now. And sometimes some characters might just have to have less of an emphasis. But segue, two of my favorite characters had a lot of emphasis in this episode and I want to talk about it. So let's start with Wolfgang because Wolfgang gets quite a bit of like, he and Guido really carry this episode in terms of like emotional weight until the very end, that is. But in this episode, we kind of see Wolfgang mulling over just the situation he's put himself in. And the episode starts with this really interesting sequence at the Holocaust Memorial where all of the characters are kind of like walking in and out of the memorial. And I thought that was really striking. I didn't remember this at all. And it was just beautiful. I don't know. Did anyone else have like a strong reaction to it like I did?
Yeah, I'm with you. I always think it's beautiful when I see the sequence. It's very artistic. It's very well done. I like the frame rates. They're like super moody.
And ethereal almost?
Yeah. It feels like everybody's in some kind of like sense eight purgatory in a weird way, something else than their heads, but like almost in like a brand new space that they haven't experienced before, which I think a Holocaust memorial would be a great place to represent that, because I'm sure for a lot of people, even now, it's such a horrific idea. So how can you get into the headspace of the people in that time experiencing it in any way, you know? So that's, I think that's why they keep saying this is a good place to talk. It's a good place to talk because you can think through the horrors of the past, I guess. I don't know. It's so solemn. It's so strange there. So maybe you can get out of your body for a bit as it is.
I assume, too, we're supposed to connect the statement, was the Holocaust an aberration or a reflection of who we truly are, to this idea of the sensates as this other species apparently that are disconnected. So is this species or are humans the aberration or who we truly are?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, no, I think I really like that. I forgot about that line. So I think that's a really great point to bring up there. So he's walking in and out of this Holocaust memorial, and then later Steiner, his bitch-ass cousin, comes in and starts threatening Felix. And like, I don't know about you, but Steiner's tattoo on the back of his head is really distracting to me. I like was trying to focus on the things that he was saying while also being like, why would you do that? It looks so like, oh, weird.
I think scalp tattoos naturally have that effect, so you're not alone.
I guess. Might not just be me. But, like, his cousin is terrible. And so Wolfgang decides that there's, like, the only thing that he can really do is confront him and the cousin's gang and, like, make as if he was handing back the diamonds, which, side note, I never thought to freeze diamonds in ice, which I thought was really, really cool. That was a really neat idea. So I guess if I ever rob a bank after apparently like murdering someone, don't check my freezer, guys. Don't look there.
Or for the body parts of the person you apparently murdered for this episode.
That too. Man, I'm so violent sometimes. But so we get Felix and he's in this like parking lot or something like that. And I want to get your initial reactions, newbies, on this scene. Did you expect Wolfgang to just kind of roll over? Were you surprised when he like had everything all planned out, which we find out like once Leto shows up? How did you feel about this?
Well, I wasn't expecting the bazooka at the end.
Yeah,
but, other than that, I wasn't really too surprised by that. I didn't think that Wolfgang would roll over that easily to just give him what he wanted. I understand the connection with Felix, but I, like we've seen throughout this whole series, and I think it's been played really well, is he comes from a violent past and violence is what he knows and he's good at it. So I wouldn't think that even Felix would be disappointed that he would turn to wanting to kill him, because mm-hmm. it's just kind of in his nature, and it's a very isolated nature, which made that scene that we were just talking about at the beginning at the Holocaust Museum just very more striking to me later in the episode, having watched it already and having that imagery in my head of Wolfgang just sort of being a one-man show, and mm-hmm. Felix is the only person who he's had this true connection with, until, of course, you know, he realizes this connection with the other people in his little cluster thing. But yeah, watching him talk to Leto and being like, you know, oh, it's, you know, when you have nothing, it's kind of easy to just kill when you don't have like any emotional connection, or, you know, you're just so separated. And then that leads into like that exchange with Leto later where he's just like, well, I'm really good at lying. And it's this detached, like we're watching these people who are so attached to one another talk about how unattached they are to certain things in their real life. So like Leto is attached to creating this persona that's completely unattached to his personality, and Wolfgang is just unattached to anything except Felix. So it's just a really interesting way to look at these characters as separate from themselves, but then look at them as they find a way to connect to each other in this other way, because these people aren't the people who are like, please come help me right now. Like,
oh, definitely not.
You know, he's like, please come give me your fighting skills, or anyone asking for help. These people are like, I'll just do it myself, and if it fails, it fails. It's fine. But when the others show up, they're not resistant to help.
I also didn't find Wolfgang's preparation surprising, considering we had that sequence in the, I think it was the previous episode, where the guy comes in to threaten Caphias and saying what he wants is revenge. Mm-hmm. And so, like, this idea of revenge for, like, horrible people hurting your loved ones seems to be a theme floating through several of the characters' stories at this point. So that felt exactly like what he was going to do for me.
Definitely. And I was listening to last week's episode of Rewatchable, kind of listening to what all of them had to say. And I remember, I think it was Natalie mentioned how like Leto and Wolfgang kind of are both these alpha male like personalities. Well, I guess Wolfgang could be more of like a, oh God, I forgot what it's called, but like a lone wolf kind of thing. But they both kind of inhabit this space. And I thought it was really interesting to see not only Leto helping Wolfgang, but then Wolfgang helping Leto, but both in a way where it's like, I've helped you. We stare at each other for a couple seconds, and then like, I'll just walk away, or like get in my car and drive away. Like the Wolfgang says thank you, and I almost forget he says thank you because of the way he just kind of stares at Leto. But yeah, it's just interesting to see, like you said, these people without attachments, or like with interesting or like different attachments, helping each other out. And the thing that stuck with me, and it was kind of mirrored in both of their stories, was them talking about what they do. So Leto says, lying is easy, it's what I do. And later, I think Wolfgang says is like, fighting is what I do. I wrote it down here somewhere. Yeah.
Yes. Fighting. And he has a little furrow in his brow, and I'm like, God.
But I also really liked this team up in the beginning with Wolfgang's story, because we kind of get Leto out of his very, very low. And we kind of get him out, and he's in awe of Wolfgang. He's like, you had this all set up. Like, he's in awe of Wolfgang's performance. And he's in awe standing there like in his underwear, which I love Leto so much. And then Leto gets really, really excited when Wolfgang pulls out the bazooka. He's like, what is that?
He's like cheering. It was adorable.
Yeah. He just gets so excited. And Wolfgang, like, you can tell Wolfgang is kind of excited because he gets like that little smirk on his face when he pulls out the bazooka. But also, like, he blows up his cousin. Full stop. So what do we think the consequences of this are going to be? Is Wolfgang just going to go through and kind of get rid of all of these threats to him one by one? Like, how do you think this is going to play out for him? You have any ideas?
Well, I mean, it's not going to be great. So I'm kind of thinking if he can secure the fact that Felix is going to be under some sort of protection, which I don't exactly think is the case right now, he's going to have to lay low for a while and still try to keep an eye on Felix, because I think that that's where the threat is going to be next. Because of course the retaliation is not going to be, it's going to be against Wolfgang through Felix for sure. Right. They know that that's his weak spot. Ideally, I'd like him to leave and go to India, but you know, we're not there yet. So he can go to India in his mind. But yeah, I think it's going to be really tense to see where the threat's going to come from and how he's going to be able to protect Felix going forward.
Yeah, he clearly just wants to be left alone, but he's getting himself involved even more. Like, he's getting himself in more deeply as this goes, so I'm expecting his uncle to go batshit crazy, basically, after this, so that can be good. And I was just thinking it's too bad, like, none of the other members of the cluster is like a nurse or a doctor or something, because then they could pop in to make sure they're treating Felix right.
Right. Yeah, because there is that comment from his cousin about, like, you know, sometimes they mix up medications and then poof, someone's dead.
I have no comment about that part. But I did, what was I going to say? Caitlin, you said that it looks like he wants to just be isolated and away from everyone. Do you see it as him wanting to get away from his family or just wanting to be just like a lone wolf away from everyone but Felix in general?
I mean, are they mutually exclusive?
Yeah. Kinda
seems like he doesn't like his family. And his whole discussion, like, his family is very, he's all about the choice of his family, and his choice was Felix. He doesn't give much weight to blood family, which is what he literally says. We're not family by anything so arbitrary as blood. It's choice. So Felix is his family.
Which I think that the two other characters we see being heavily featured in this episode, they kind of mirror that, or they foil it, because Leto's family is not of blood and it matters a lot to him, kind of like Wolfgang and Felix. But then Will, his father, is so like impressed with his blood. So we see like how there can be healthier ways than this. And Wolfgang right now is not getting any love. Poor Wolfgang.
Yeah. And like I put a lot of emphasis on found family kind of in my life too. And so they're just like some of these people just around you that you gravitate towards. And sometimes blood doesn't mean as much. So it'll be interesting to see how Wolfgang decides to move forward, because his relationship with his uncle is not anything it seems like he wants to keep. So, yeah, I don't want to say really anything more because I think it's really interesting the way it plays out. But does anyone have any last words about Wolfgang before we move on to Leto? I guess, well, we're going to talk about Wolfgang here a little bit too. But to back up, so Wolfgang's storyline really helped pushes Leto to fight for what he wants. Wolfgang kind of lectures him before speeding away in his little BMW about like fighting. I don't remember the exact line. I should have looked it up, but it's basically like fighting for the things that you love, or like fighting to save what you love, or anything like that. And we see Leto like pick himself up and become a very different person from any kind of Leto we've seen before this. He's almost closer to his acting persona in this episode than he is in any other scene, like just in his normal life. And so we get sort of like this almost movie montage thing of like, Leto has to do this. He has to call Hernando, which Mitch points out that his phone was on the home screen when he was making that call. Which, side note, I was watching Sierra Burgess last night. I was thinking about phone screens too, and they kept calling each other, and they were calling each other's like, or texting each other's home number. I was like, no, that's not going to go through.
I'm glad we think of these things because, like, it's really funny. As long as we're on a tangent, everybody knows I love a good old tangent.
Here we go.
There's literally, I'll make it quick. There's a moment where Mary Jane's on the phone, and she, in the video game Spider-Man, she literally calls the DMV, and then you see her on the phone. She's trying to hide that she's not talking to her boss. She calls the DMV to make it look like she's on a call. The video game can think of a home screen not being there and a phone call needing to be up. You think like a multi-million dollar production show would be able to think of a simple detail like that, but they made it so obvious here when he's trying to call Hernando. And I'm like, okay, yeah, his mailbox is full, so how is he even getting this anyways? But it was all just a really strange technical production note for me, and it really stuck out because usually you don't see things like this in Sense8.
I think we're so immersed in technology that perhaps these things that we should be able to just kind of look past or not notice are things that come to the surface. And I mean, I don't know if these things bothered or came to the attention of you, Caitlin or Brittany, but definitely something I noticed.
I didn't notice it in that moment, but I notice it on a lot of TV shows and movies when they don't. I'm like, you can't get like a track phone and like call the track phone or something while producing this.
Yeah, I notice it across a lot of things. I'm like, it's the simplest fix. Like, what are you doing? It drives me crazy.
Just call someone on the production. Just like, yeah, get it going.
So like, I know this from a production standpoint even like before cell phones were like a huge thing. I know that I think there's always someone off screen just talking through the lines with someone on Will and Grace. Like even if they were just sitting on like the house phone, there's someone is off screen reading the lines back to them. It's not like they're responding to nothing either. Like it's so easy to just have someone on the other line. I mean, I know he's leaving a voicemail in this scene, but just have them call a random like PA's cell phone, you know, like it's really not that hard to get the screen to change.
Yeah. I mean, they do more complicated things in their scenes, like cutting back and forth between the same characters in different locations, carrying on one conversation.
Oh,
they do
yeah.
that seamlessly, which I noticed more in this episode than I have in the past, but they can't figure out the phone stuff.
it's like sort of one of those things. It's like an afterthought where they're about to like sign off on the final cut. And they're like, we could send this back or we could just roll with it.
Good enough. Whatever. We put a lot of work in the other stuff. It's fine.
It kind of teaches me an important lesson in life to notice this kind of thing. Because I don't know about anyone else, but sometimes if I feel uncomfortable in a social situation in public with strangers, I don't feel like talking to someone in a waiting room, I don't know, something to that effect, I will make a fake phone call where I completely am just one-siding it, but I don't call anyone, I don't touch anything. But now I feel like I do need to like call the DMV, make sure the volume's on low so no one hears it. So it looks like I'm having an actual phone call because maybe people will notice just like I noticed here with Leto.
Oh man, that would stress me out because then I would be afraid that the phone would actually ring while I was on the phone or pretending to be on the phone. And then I'd
like, exactly. That's another thing.
That's my fear.
What if a call comes in?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Yeah, it's sometimes a good tactic and sometimes not, but I'd recommend it for anybody who just really doesn't want to talk to strangers. It tends to be a pretty good way of making them ignore you at the time.
Hey, fair enough. Sometimes we need that. I get it. He calls Hernando, and then so he checks that off of his list of like things to do before he like fucks shit up. And then he goes and revisits the barman that he treated so terribly in the last episode, which made me really happy because like I don't like seeing people who are just trying to help be kind of mistreated. And so he goes and kisses the barman. And that scene to me is very cinematic in a way where it felt like, again, Leto acting as one of his characters. And his line in there is my favorite line, so we'll get to it in a little bit. But he like just has this very loaded conversation or just like tense scene with this barman. Did anyone else kind of enjoy that or thought it was notable?
I thought it was so over the top. I was expecting Leto to be like trying to get caught by paparazzi to like be out in front of the story. So when he went to Joaquin, he'd be like, already out. Can't do anything.
Interesting. Okay.
And then, yeah, that's what I was thinking too. And then I was like, oh, this is going to be a whole thing where then Hernando's going to be upset because he chose to do it with someone else. And then Leto's going to have to go through this. It wasn't anything thing. But now, like, I just don't, like, I get it. Like, it was, I kind of get it on a very much smaller level where he's just like, okay, I know that one person in the world knows. And if I could tell one person in the real world who I cannot control, then I will be okay because I know that this is out there already in a very, very small way. It's out there for the public knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I was like, was this really the best way to do it?
You know, that brings up a good point. I found myself watching the people in the background, like out the window of the bar while Leto was kissing the barman. And like, they were kind of staring through the window. And so I could totally see what you guys were waiting for in terms of like him trying to just get it out there, get ahead of the news.
Well, yeah, geez, even if that's like a note for the extras, like, all right, in this scene, I want you guys to start kind of peeking through the window a little bit more than you would. Be noticed.
Yeah, they were like looking through the window like, oh, what's going on? And I had never noticed that before. But I think my brain was kind of waiting for the same thing that you guys were, even though I knew how it was going to go down. So that's interesting. But it seems like he doesn't, at this point, just like this high that he's riding right now, it doesn't seem like Leto cares about Joaquin releasing the pictures. It seems like Leto is very much like, gotta get my friend back, gotta make her safe, and then gotta get my man. And he does those things in that order. He goes to Joaquin and, I mean, he gets his ass handed to him a little bit before just like knocking Joaquin out. And again, he's like peacocking almost. And he's very much like his movie persona. I was rooting and like yelling at my TV throughout this whole scene. Did anyone else have that sort of reaction to this fight, this showdown?
Yes, because I would throw flower pots too.
Oh my God, the flowers.
It's amazing.
When he comes up, I'm like, what are you doing?
And his aim is just not good.
I love the way they're like doing the contradiction or juxtaposition of like the movie style entrance with the car and the cigarette. And then he just like gets punched right in the face. Like as much as he tries to be the guy who does that with the car and the cigarette looking so cool, he's not that person. He's the person who gets punched in the face.
And then he's like, not the face, not the face. Oh, it kind of reminded me a little bit of, I think it's the second episode, the fight that Cassius got in before the spirit of Van Damme consumed him, where like he just like is trying so hard and then is just losing and someone else kind of tag teams in and takes over.
Yeah, we have a lot of fighters in our team, so that's kind of convenient.
Yeah, and they're good at it.
Yep, we have Sun, we have Will, and
Wolfgang's one more. Brawler.
Wolfgang, definitely here. And I guess, I mean, Leto seems like he has some chops in terms of how to fight. And maybe Cassius has picked up some, you know, karate moves now, either from Sun or from his Van Damme movies. So like I said, we have a lot of fighters here.
We do. And Leto's obviously very much looks like stunt work. Like he was just kind of like going through things he learned on the movies, which endears him to me very much so.
Yeah, like there's no power behind his hits. It's just like know how to throw a convincing punch.
Right. There's no, the reflex isn't there. You only see the reflex once Wolfgang steps in and he does that thing where like,
oh my God,
he steps in, Joaquin goes to punch Leto and Wolfgang Leto kind of like takes his arm and does like that thing where you like divert the punch and then punch back. I'm not a fighter, so I have no idea what I'm talking about, but like, I hope you know what I'm saying.
Rewatch the scene and pay attention.
Yeah. But I don't know. I really enjoyed their team up in this one because you get Leto strength in the team up earlier, and then you get kind of Wolfgang's strength and influence in this one. And Joaquin is just crazy. Like, he has crazy eyes. And I knew how this was going to go down, but like, I don't know about you guys. I was like still afraid for Leto because of those crazy eyes, and like, he seemed hopped up on drugs in the way that he was carrying himself, and
it seemed like he went Super Saiyan from Dragon Ball Z. Like, when he rips off his shirt, he's just like, hurrah! I was like, oh, maybe don't do this, Leto. Maybe he has like a weapon around. Why does no one have a weapon in this scene? I feel like you would have. I mean, the best thing is Danny like hits him with like a shovel. But I mean, flower pots do not count as a weapon.
Yeah. I think that's the only thing actually that I would have liked more of out of this scene was having Danny be more of her own agent. Cause she hits him with a shovel. And then, I mean, I'd have the same reaction. And once he wouldn't go down, like, I would back off and be kind of afraid, but we don't see Danny taking a lot of control in this scene or like really fighting for herself, which is disappointing to me. I don't know if anybody else was kind of disappointed in that.
He's her abuser. So even if she has the upper hand, she may not feel like she ever will because he has the psychological hold over her as well as the physical.
That's a good point. I take your point. But yeah, so this scene happens. It's amazing. And Danny is safe again. And so now that Leto has his best gal pal, they go to get his man back. And so Leto shows up to where Hernando is staying. I know Mitch put a note in here as like, where was Hernando living? I think I kind of assumed he was like living, like he had his own place still perhaps, or maybe like living with a family member.
It should have been said, I think, because when you start to question very simple plot things like that, I don't know. I feel like you could squeeze in a line here in this episode about where he is. Because I know he left and didn't tell him where he was going. Or maybe he could have. Like, in the breakup scene, he could have been like, I'm going to go back to my house, or I'm going to my friend's house, just so like we can get that kind of plot out of the way. But it felt strange that I once again had to question something here, almost like the phone thing again.
Perhaps he needed, just thinking off the top of my head, perhaps he needed just to own his own place. But even though he was staying with Leto, just in terms of like, because of where they live, like they don't want to put both their names on a lease, or like they,
right. We talked like, about that don't before too, make totally.
It official that like they live together in terms of mail and
right.
Voting registration and all that kind of stuff. So maybe he did have his own place.
I mean, I suppose with Leto making as much money as he does, he wouldn't need help with rent in the very least. So if Hernando was fine before Leto affording his own apartment, he might as well keep it for that purpose.
Mm-hmm. But it was a nice apartment, and Hernando is kind of caught off guard, and he cares about Leto's face, you guys. He was so sad. He wasn't like, why are you showing up here? Get off my property. He was like, what happened to your face? And Hernando was great.
Yeah, he was just like, you can't shoot tomorrow.
Yeah. He knows his production schedule, even though they've been apart for a couple days.
And I felt so much heartache for both actors. He's like, you still love me. And he's like, well, I just know shooting's important to you, because I know like Leto hasn't quite won him over yet. Like, he did get in the house. He is seeing that Hernando still cares for him, but I think like Leto knows he doesn't win until he shows the trump card of Danny.
Yeah. Until he makes Danny walk in and then they group hug.
Someone needs to take away Danny's phone. I'm over this.
Oh, yeah.
It's so creepy.
Yeah, that wasn't a great move. I did like how they kind of stared at her and were like, really? Really?
It wasn't even comedic. It was just like, why are you doing this again?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I had the exact same reaction. I'm like, what are you doing? I don't even care if it's just for you. It's still creepy.
Yeah, this is how we got into this mess.
This is why we can't have nice things, Danny. Please.
Yeah. So it was kind of nice. It was very nice. And then that kind of put a damper, I think, on the scene for me. Even though I do love Danny, I love her a lot, I didn't like the choice that they made to have her kind of do that, because it didn't play as super funny. It played as, ugh, why?
Yeah. I loved, though, when Leto goes to get her, he says, you know, let's go home. And it's just because you're part of the family now. It was cute.
Aw, so cute. So, yeah, so they're, I wouldn't say happily ever after, because obviously there's still quite a bit to this show left, but they're happy for now. And so basically, Leto's secret is going to get out. How do you guys feel about this kind of playing out from here? Like, Leto is no longer going to be hiding with Hernando. Like, this is going to happen. Was anybody kind of worried while they were also happy with this ending?
I mean, I don't think things are going to go swimmingly once this mm-hmm. gets out. But can we just have a nice moment? Just want to appreciate this moment.
Yes.
Let's nice moment. Let's live in that group hug. I loved that group hug. That's Leto and Wolfgang, and I love them so much. And I think this episode, even though I forgot about it, this episode is one of the big reasons why I love those two, and what really endeared them to me was just seeing what they go through in these. So I'm happy to have shared it with you. And let's move on to Will, because he still is doing a lot of the lifting in terms of like the exposition and the what's going on and the science of everything. And so we see him powwowing with Jonas again, which I would just like to note that throughout all of Will's scenes, he's kind of taking like a little notable spot tour around Chicago, which makes me really happy because I love my city so much. And there are certain things that I love bringing people to, and he hits a lot of them. For instance, like his first scene is in front of like these really weird face fountains that are in Millennium Park downtown in the Loop.
I was about to say, aren't they right next to the Bean?
Yes. Yes. They're right next to the Bean. And so they're just like these giant video walls with just faces on them, and the faces stare at each other.
It's
and
so
like,
weird.
Yeah. They kind of make like facial expressions at each other. And about every 5 minutes, each of the video screens, whoever's on that screen at the moment, they purse their lips and then water comes shooting out of it. Like they're spitting water at each other.
What the hell?
Yeah. They're really creepy. Yeah.
So do you remember, Danielle, in my shorthand notes for Will, I just wrote the word water, Jonas, blah, blah, blah. The water was referencing that because I meant to bring this up in the podcast. I meant to actually put that in the show notes. Like, what the hell was that weird face fountain thing?
Oh, I love bringing people there because it's so weird. But I love going there at the same time because it's weird. So if you're ever in Chicago, if you're going to visit the Bean, these things are like right next to it. They're not too hard to find. So if you want to go see fountains spitting at each other with faces that make weird expressions, like go there. Side note done. It's Independence Day. I think that's like the most important thing going on with Will. So it's kind of the backdrop of everything. And so a lot of the conversations in this episode and with Will especially about independence and like what, just like being your own person. And he and Jonas are talking about what makes a sensate a sensate. And we get a little bit more of an answer here. I know, Mitch, you weren't entirely satisfied with these conversations, but I thought that they were pretty useful in terms of who the sensates are, but we are not newbies. So Brittany and Caitlin, how did you feel about the info dumps between Will and Jonas in this episode?
All right. So this was annoying. I feel like Jonas is preying on Will a little bit because I feel like Will is the most like, opposed to Caffeus, I guess, like Will is the most like wide-eyed, I'm going to hang on every single word you're saying because I find you so interesting character. And it's frustrating because I don't know where to place my feelings on Jonas right now. Like, I kind of in this episode took a turn being like, I think he's more of a threat than he is a help because of the way he sees Will like clinging to him and trusting every single thing that he's saying and taking it for what it is on a very surface level. And I will say I tuned out like a lot of it because I was like, why is this going on for so long? Like last week's episode, you know, you had the flip back and forth a little bit between Riley and Will getting information, and that felt better because it was more spread out and there was more going on, but this was just so much. I couldn't even tell you really what he said.
Okay. I can tell you, but I want to hear Caitlin's reaction first.
I mean, it felt like hand waving a little bit, like science mumbo jumbo, like timey wimey, wibbly wobbly, like sciencey wincy. But it was also a little confusing in that, like, you're talking about this as like a genetic thing, and yet none of the sensates are genetically related. They're just random people. In which case, how is this like a genetic thing? Because it should be passed down. That's how evolution works. So I found the whole thing very, it was a very odd approach. And also, I'm just going to say, like, so they're metahumans.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it.
They're mutants. Anyway, you look at it. Yeah, it's probably been done before somewhere else.
Yeah, so the way that I kind of take it, and I do agree, I think it was drawn out for just like, we got a lot of information and a lot of context last week, whereas this time it was a very long time just to get out the fact that they're like, that it's an evolutionary thing and not just like a brainwave kind of thing. But the way that I take it is that they have like some sort of, there's like a genetic mutation somewhere out there where one out of however many people that's born is genetically different from a Homo sapien. And we don't get the name for it here. We will get the name for it. But like, they're basically really, really genetically close to being a human, but they have a predisposition of having this mental connection with other people. And they can have it with other, all others who are like them. But then there also is some sort of like magic science to how the clusters are chosen, I guess. Because like you were saying, Caitlin, they're not related in any way. So there has to be some sort of other thing acting upon this in order to cluster these eight very different people together. And I also think this explanation answers a question that Natalie brought up in last week's episode about whether just anyone born at the same time can be a sensate, or if it's like groups of very specific people. I think this kind of narrows that down to like anyone who is this Homo sapiens-like species is a sensate. So it's not just like anyone born at any time can have this predisposition. It's like you have to be specifically born as this species to have it. And then you get kind of like grouped together. So I think it maybe clarifies the things, but then also muddies the water a little bit. But would you rather not know this far, like that it's a genetic thing, and just kind of like keep it where it was? Or is this helpful in kind of parsing through what's going on?
I mean, I appreciate that they're trying to give some kind of explanation. I wonder if it would be more interesting if it was like they're like an evolutionary step forward for humans versus like been there. The beginning of time. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if it even makes a difference. Just, I'm glad they're like attempting an explanation, but at the same time, I'm like, I'm not sure how much sense it makes.
Yeah, I think I would rather be in the dark, but I also get the fact that you kind of, there's only two episodes left of this season. So if you want people to come back for season two, maybe you should give them something. And this is the final dangling carrot that'll be enough to carry us through. However, I didn't need it.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's good, though, because you're here for it. That makes me happy.
It doesn't turn you away, hopefully. I guess that's the goal for this. So, yeah, we kind of get that reveal, and there will be more discussion about this as we move forward. So it might clear up and get a little bit better, or it might just be something that you want them to just brush under the rug and move on from. But we'll have to wait and see. But in this sort of info dump, we do get more of that sort of suspicion towards Jonas. Will figures out that because of the whole eye connection thing and like letting whispers through, that Angelica died to protect the sensates and like that specific cluster that she had birthed. But you still don't know what's going on with Jonas or what was going on with Angelica. So are you wavering on whether or not she and or Jonas are bad guys? Like, are they on the same side as the Sense Eights? Is this sort of like a fighting triangle that's going on between like the Cluster, Jonas, and BPO? Like, how do you feel about the suspicion that's going on here?
I don't know if Jonas even knows what side he's on, because he has that line when he's talking about, like, you know, he was born in India, then he moved to London, then he moved to America, and he envied people with clean allegiances. And I was like, that is clearly meaning how he is with the fact that apparently he used to hunt down Sense8s. So mm-hmm. I think that was meant to be him also saying, maybe we shouldn't trust you.
Maybe. Yeah, no, that line did stick out to me as well. And then he was like, God save the queen. And like, why are you saying this? Are you trying to make Will distrust you, even though you're asking him to trust you? What are you doing?
Yeah. And like I said, I just feel like Will is such a pawn, and I don't like it because I don't want him to be used as a pawn. Also, he really needs to get new socks. They drove me crazy this whole episode. I was like, what's with the socks?
Were they bad socks?
It makes him seem more like boyish. You know what I mean? Like, like so susceptible. And, you know, then he has like that great scene with his dad, but like, you could just tell he's a child, you know, like, I'm like, ah.
Yeah. Let's talk about that scene with his dad, and let's talk about his dad. Telling him the story of like, my dad wanted me to be, I think it was an electrician, like in the union, and I hated it, but hey, you're a cop and this is great. Which I thought was kind of weird, because we never see Will wavering on his decision to become a cop. Like, it never seems like he doesn't really want to be one. And then this scene happened, and that made me question what Will was wanting or what the purpose of that scene was.
I thought it was about the fact that he hasn't told his dad he got suspended.
Yeah.
Oh,
I forgot about that as a super fan. I think you did too, Dan. Yeah.
Yeah, I did. Well, because I'm thinking, I don't know about you, Mitch, but I'm thinking backwards and forwards, and hard to separate the two. Okay.
Honestly, I quite frankly don't remember if he was back in the Force. So it's kind of, I don't know why that's a specific detail that left my mind. So I guess, I don't know. It's all just very strange to me that I would have forgotten all these details that are very important.
Yeah. I mean, he's not very open with his dad in general. His dad seems to be, his relationship with his dad is really interesting in that his dad seems to like reach out, but then also slightly burn their bridges at the same time sometimes. Like when Will would meet him in the bar, his dad would kind of reach out, be happy to see him, but then say something slightly inflammatory towards Will that makes him recoil. And so it seems like they're constantly having this tense dance with each other. But we get to see them both relaching on the boat on Lake Michigan, watching the fireworks, which I thought was a really nice moment with Will and his dad.
I'm with my kid and they're about to blow shit up.
Yeah. I think that line was like what really drew me to this scene, because sure, we have the whole moment where his dad is telling him this story about his father and their relationship, but Will knows that their relationship, like you said, Danielle, is this tense dance, but for better or worse, he's not like just gonna cut him off, like cut him out of his life, because he's so entwined with his career and the legacy that it's attached to Will being a cop. And, you know, he may like, he's, even when he's walking up to the boat in the beginning, when like that grill was like pretty, I was a little concerned. It was very much on fire. But he walks up to the boat. Like already, like he doesn't even say hello. He's just already getting yelled at. Like I was like, oh, this isn't going to go well. But then it does. Like that's just their relationship. That's the nature of how these two interact. Mm-hmm. And I just thought it was a very real look at of a type of relationship that exists between a father and son. Like it's not perfect, and you know, there's no female influence right now keeping them together. But these two are still coming together and working the way they need to interact with each other.
And it's not like they feel obligated to spend this time together on holidays like this. Like they're genuinely enjoying it.
Right. Like
enjoying
them there for the
city.
Fireworks. They're both there for, you know, the beer and the company.
Hot dogs. Chicago.
This whole show must make you so happy, if not just for the Chicago things, but for everything else. But in particular, all the Chicago things.
The Chicago things do make me happy. I think it was right when the second season started, Kyle put an article together from people who lived in the spaces that all the senseis are from, or was trying to. And I kind of wrote about that. I mean, it's not a perfect portrayal, especially in terms of like the fact that like Will is a cop and his interactions with people in the community, but it does very much highlight the beauty of Chicago.
Well,
it's not a foreign place. It's not a place that we don't see often, but sometimes the ways in which it highlights certain views of it, is kind of really true to life in terms of the awe that happens. So Chicago. Right.
And I think what makes the show really, really unique is that it spends almost all of its budget on having everything shot like where it's set. Because you can feel kind of like a gravitas when they're on, I'm assuming, Lake Michigan here, mm-hmm. and they're looking at the fireworks. It feels like it probably literally was 4th of July for them.
Yeah.
And they were filming this. So that's pretty big.
4th of July, or sometimes they just do random fireworks during the summer too. So yeah, I was trying to figure out when they were filming it, but
yeah.
Can I just say that I found it super distracting that they kept saying it's Independence Day, because I don't know anyone who calls it Independence Day. It's the 4th of July.
That's fair. Yeah.
Is that a Chicago thing, Danielle?
No. I mean, not that I'm aware of. That's a good point.
Right. Maybe like the city would say it, but because I don't know. That's strange. I trust your authority on this, you know?
My Midwestern authority. Yeah.
Yes.
The only explanation that I can think of is like, this is them trying to speak to a more international audience.
Yeah, I guess. But,
you know, like that would be the only thing. Not that, I mean, Americans talk about the 4th of July so much that I'm sure it has permeated past our borders a little bit, but perhaps this was just to make it clear like what they were celebrating.
I mean, I assume it was to like hammer home the themes of independence, but I was just like, nobody calls it Independence Day. No. We call it the 4th of July. So it was distracting.
Yes. So to be clear, not a Chicago thing. That was not.
And even like tasted weird when Will first says it to Jonas.
Yeah.
Like, I almost had to think twice about what it was because it's so foreign to my ears at this point.
What is Independence Day? Is that something that I should be aware of? And I'm like, oh, 4th of July.
It's that movie. Yeah,
I was like, am I missing a really important holiday now?
Yeah.
Should I be getting another day off somewhere?
Exactly.
Yeah. So not a Chicago thing, but what is a Chicago thing a little bit is people making out down by the riverfront, which is what Will and Riley are sort of doing. It's a thing on the riverfront.
So making out with empty air down in public.
because now we kind of know how visiting works. So like if he was in Riley's space, he would look normal in his space. But because they are doing it in Chicago, he is making out with air, which is hilarious. And they're also talking about meeting up in person. And what did Will say? This feels so amazing and you're not even here. Imagine what it'll feel like when we're together.
Yeah.
How is he not like locked up though? Because like everybody must think he's crazy for all the things he's doing, especially making out with air all the time. That's definitely like lock upable, right?
Mitch, there are weirder things that you see on the streets or on the train in Chicago.
Okay.
I will say that.
I'll take that.
Yeah. Brittany, what were you saying?
I kind of thought that Riley was there for a hot second because of the way she said, oh, my dad's playing tonight. And I was like, oh, in Chicago? That's nice. And then I was like, oh, wait, no, you're still in Iceland. Never mind.
Mm-hmm.
But they can do things like that. And you think like, oh, she would have traveled if her dad was playing in the States, I guess. Because he's pretty famous. So that would make sense. But he wasn't playing.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So they are, I think the thing to take from this is they are actively thinking about being physically together in the same place. So that'll kind of, I know some of our newbies are kind of waiting for the senseis to actually inhabit the same space instead of just mentally visiting each other. So this is kind of another step towards that because they're actually talking about it even more. So breadcrumbs. But yeah, so Riley is still in Iceland. Her dad, it's like the night of his big concert. She gives him, the conductor, and another person who's a part of the symphony, some ecstasy on a rooftop beforehand, which seems like a great idea. I don't know how ecstasy works. Mitch and I are kind of on the same wavelength, and I don't think that's how that works. I don't think it's that casual of a drug, but maybe it is. I don't know.
I know. I was so on edge watching the performance because I'm like, someone's going to mess up. Someone's going to mess up. Someone's going to mess up. Or Riley, like, I mean, the thing with Riley did kind of happen where something happens in the audience. But like, I'm like, someone is going to screw up and then it's going to be a huge thing. Like, how did this brilliant pianist like mess up? And
ecstasy.
I just keep waiting for him to like have a heart attack or something. Because I'm like, he's just too delightful. Something terrible is going to happen to him.
Yeah.
Aww. Yeah.
I'm like, who just carries ecstasy pills in their pocket? Like, it's just Advil. Yeah. Or like Tic Tacs, even the way that she gave it out.
A DJ, apparently.
Yeah. It seemed to me like her stuff that was going on with London, like her being a part of that drug culture, kind of felt like she was just kind of there and not an active participant as much. But then you get something like this, and like she has the ecstasy with her. So it's really, it's hard for me to get a read on Riley a lot of times, even though I have seen this show multiple times, just because of these sorts of decisions or like sorts of things that she does.
Well, I mean, part of me was like, is this a musician thing? Is this an Icelandic thing? I think I'm leaning more toward musician. I don't get this impression of people from Iceland that they're casual about party drugs. I think that would be way too big of a generalization to make. So I'm going to go with musician thing. I think her father might have already just been like very cool with drugs growing up. We had them reference like, you look like you're smoking weed like you're in 85 or something. So it feels like drugs were just in their lives in Riley's home growing up. And that was just cool because her dad was a musician. But it's like, you know, like a rock star musician, like you're a pianist in a symphony.
And there's a very big leap from weed to ecstasy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And they're all so cool. It's the fact that nothing is really said about it ever in this episode, or in the fact that she's just giving it out. They're so accepting of it. And it's just so much to take in at once that, I mean, I'm glad we're all reacting the way that I was. Makes me feel less alone.
Yeah. Well, perhaps it was a misdirection in that they wanted you to maybe think about the drugs and what was going to happen with the drugs. And then they kind of veered way off course and were like, JK, we're going to show you some births now. So, because I want to talk about this, and I want to talk about kind of how it crescendos and how we get to Riley at the very end. But this remembrance of all of the sensei's births and their first breaths together, which was discussed in the last episode, this whole thing is kind of set off through what I'm assuming, or kind of how it plays to me, is that the song that they're playing, the song that her father is playing in that concert hall right now, is the song that her father played over the phone to Riley's mother while she was going into labor and giving birth to Riley. Is that correct?
It felt right to me when you described it that way.
Okay.
That's what I thought, but also at the time was
that also, it's really hard to know.
I don't know.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it was, I guess you could say it was silent during the birthing scene. So it's hard to tell what audio was really going on, but
we get the impression
that he was doing the same thing, if not something similar that just reminded her of it. But the point's still there that it's the piano music that brought her there, regardless of what song it was.
Yeah. I want to know first impressions, or Mitch, remembering this. I don't know if it surprised you like it did me, because I forgot about this. But did we see the birthing stuff as beautiful, overkill feelings? What were overall feelings about this?
Well, once I got past the fact that like, okay, we're going there with every shot of this birthing scene, I thought it was very beautiful, because we hear at the beginning of the, like, between the last few episodes, like, yes, you all took your first breath at the same time. Mm-hmm. And to see where every birth happened, what was going on when their birth happened, like in the circumstances, like surrounding their birth, like, you know, that just, I mean, it was a little on the nose, but the connection between Will being born in the back of a cop car and the lights, and you know, stuff that was going on around him, and Cafias being born surrounded by all these strong women together without a male figure around, and then everyone kind of being distracted by a telenovela as Leto was born, and just seeing how their kind of joy around their births. I thought Sun's birth scene, especially where she's being born in a cemetery,
yeah,
and her having her mother juxtaposed against that setting was very, very powerful. And then having Nomi, you know, was very
sterile.
Yeah, sterile and disconnected, and mm-hmm. you know, there was no feeling there whatsoever, no connection, and she didn't even really pass through the birth canal. So what was she like? Does that? That's very heavy-handed imagery.
Nothing wrong against people in real life that I've had.
Yeah, no.
We're talking thematically.
Yeah, thematically, it was very striking.
It was a choice. It was definitely a specific choice.
And then, you know, just seeing all of them play out against each other, and then having Riley's kick it off and then Riley end it. Like, you see this like warm imagery of the first birth scene, but then this very cold imagery, like literally cold. It was snowing in that last scene, and then sort of being like thrown for a loop, like what was actually real and her story.
So you guys know now, I guess, more newbies, right? Like, I'm trying not to I think Danielle and I are both afraid to lead you on. But
I was stripped of knowledge here.
I don't feel like I know. Yeah, I don't know that I know anything new after this. I just feel grossed out.
That's fair.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's actually something that I did want to touch on, in that it felt to me like the birthing scene was filmed relatively similarly to how we have gotten sex and orgy scenes in this show in the past, in that it kind of feels like they're trying to normalize it because it's something that we don't really think about in these terms. And they're trying to like normalize it and make it more like this is a part of life and not just something that we compartmentalize and don't think about a lot. I don't know if that makes sense, but like they're trying to make the sex scenes feel more natural. Like this is what people do, or like birth. Yes, it's beautiful, but also like here's all of the graphic nature of that and like the situations that people go through and just how straining it can be.
I forgot about Wolfgang's in the bathtub.
Yeah. Wolfgang's in the bathtub. So I'm not surprised, Caitlin, that you had sort of the similar reaction to this as you have with the sex scenes. And I mean, for good reason, I completely understand how it makes you uncomfortable. This made me uncomfortable, but I completely understand because they are filmed relatively similarly in that way.
I just don't feel like I'm learning anything new from it. So it just feels gratuitous because mm-hmm. it's on Netflix.
Okay.
Like, we're the new age HBO. Watch out. Here we come. Hold on to your weaves. But
I don't know. I liked that they leaned into it a little bit. I mean, it was like the first scene, I was very like, oh, okay. But once I knew where the rest of that was going, it was fine. I also like grew up like watching A Baby Story on TLC. Like, I loved all of those shows, like where they just follow like different parents who are having their first kid. I don't know why I was so into it. Like, it was at the time where I was also like really into ER. So like gratuitous grossness was something that like I just grew up watching, you know, like ER, like they didn't have to have that person's guts spill all over the floor during that surgical scene, but you know, they did sometimes. So it didn't, like, once I got over the first shock of like, okay, this is where we're going, then I was like, okay, this is mm-hmm. where we're at.
You watching Hannibal makes a lot more sense to me now.
Yeah, Hannibal, though, for some reason, I'll watch, like, ER and Grey's Anatomy and, you know, anything that has, like, kind of, like, a gross cringe factor to it. But when it comes to crime and people, like, intentionally cutting people up and putting them on display, I can't handle it. It's so weird. Like,
I mean, that's legitimate. Not, like the Saw movies or anything. Totally.
Yeah. Like if it's not natural, like, you know, something is going wrong in the ER or someone is injured, right, that problem needs to be fixed and this is the way to fix it, I'm okay with it. But like the scene in Hannibal where he has the body cut up into like different layers, like he took a saw and went down the person and put them on display in like a glass case. Like, I didn't need that.
That's that's fine. A lot.
You know, like that was a lot. So that, but this I could handle and.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, I see Caitlin's perspective because I always expect myself to react like you did, Caitlin, like this is gratuitous. This is too much. This is gross. I never do, and I think I understand it now from your perspective, Brittany, that I think it's because it's not like an evil sawing people into layers kind of gore. It's a birthing thing, so I don't know if they used to... I'm sure they used to blur it out on TLC's...
oh, yeah, they blurred it out, because like,
right, but
show that it wasn't HBO.
I don't know, but something triggers my brain when I watch this. It's like, this is natural. You don't have to feel grossed out about it. And like I feel... in a way, like, fortunate that my brain is able to compartmentalize like that, but I still feel like maybe I should be more grossed out than I am. I'm so calm about it. Yeah, when I watch it, I'm like... I am,
like, also on edge. Like, it's not like I'm like, oh, yes, show me more. I'm more like, okay, no. This is a thing that's happening, but I'm also kind of okay with it.
I only remember feeling emotion. That's the thing. Like, I feel strong emotion because I'm crying with everyone, like everyone, but I'm not like grossed emotion. Like, I don't have anything of like, this needs to stop, because I'm like, I'm only concentrated in the character moments in this thing. They tend to distract me completely from even the content, because I'm feeling so heavily for all the characters.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, it's also one of those things where, like, I don't need it every episode. You know?
Yeah.
I never need to see this again in an episode, in just the same way. Like, I don't need an orgy every episode, and I don't need a sex scene every episode. But if you need to put it in and it has a purpose, then fine. And I think that what we discussed, especially with Nomi's sex scene in this episode, like, it had a purpose. It shows her trying to just be... have a normal night and just get things back to normal and feel safe and connected with another person. And when you think about it like that, yes, it makes more sense to have that included. Like, did they need to have that scene to show that, like, hey, Nomi's still here, we're just not giving her much to work with this episode? Probably not. There's probably another way to do it, but that's the way that they chose to do it.
I think my reaction to this scene is closer to Caitlin's, actually, in that I had to keep reminding myself of that in order to make it through this. I had to remind myself, like, this is the normalization of it. Like, this is very much a scene of showcasing, like, strong women, like, going through this and, like, how beautiful it is. That was not my immediate reaction to it. My immediate reaction was definitely discomfort, because I am not, like, maybe the biggest fan of kids and pregnancy and stuff. Like, I am happy for people who are. Like, it's not something that I'm personally good with. And so it took more mental labor, I think, to watch this scene than it does for me to watch, like, the sex scenes, because I was feeling uncomfortable in this. I get the purpose of it and I can appreciate it. Mentally, it just wasn't my kind of gut reaction to it.
I also have a personal issue, and this is totally just an individual thing, because I had health issues a few years ago and I can no longer have kids.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's hard to...
It's a little slap in the face in a little way.
Gotcha.
To me, which makes it a little harder too.
Yeah, I completely understand. Yeah, so this was a scene that happened. I think the only other point that I want to make about it, in just talking about it now... We had mentioned how they were talking about how all the sensates took their first breaths together. And so in seeing this scene, and even like this whole episode seemed like a transition episode where we're finally getting more of these characters together. We're finally getting more of the answers. And so now we're flashing back to their first breath together. And it kind of feels like this episode in itself was another sort of like first breath. And now they're going to start something new, or like this is a new chapter of their life. And by flashing back to a birth, it kind of connects it everything together, whereas this episode is a birth to what comes next, which is how I kind of like to think about it too, if that makes sense at all to anyone.
It does. You always do, Danielle. You're a very logical person. I appreciate your opinions.
Thank you.
It only took 10 of 12 episodes to get there.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, it is a slow-moving show. It's very much a character piece. But now that it's on this sort of track, the pacing very much stays along these same lines.
Well, I'm on a podcast with Brittany right now, so I have to question the science. Were these babies real? Were any of these births real? Oh, what's going on here? I think there's a big production thing going on that I've heard whispers of. Is it real, Danielle?
You know what? I meant to look this up ahead of time, and I didn't.
I was afraid to.
To research. You're a super fan, Mitch.
No, I was going to spiral. I would never get out of it. I'd be like, I have to learn everything about every production thing ever.
Oh, man.
So. It's kind of like an IMDb hole, but like a production one.
I gotcha.
We can give an update next week.
Yes, we can give an update next week. I want to say that I did look this up a while ago, and I do think parts of it were real. Like, I do... I am not sure about the actual, like, crowning stuff.
That seemed realistic to me, and that's something in particular I thought was actually real. I had the impression of it, at least, but I could be wrong. We'll check in next week. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Natalie, if she's on in particular, was really curious to talk about this, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I remember her talking in like the introduction episode. So maybe we'll let her take the reins on that. I'll let her know. as a newbie, even, but okay. Still.
I was doing some Googling just as we were talking just now, and it looks like these are live births. There's an article I'm looking at on Cinema Blend and an interview with then their names were Andy and Lana Wachowski. And they said, we have live births, babies coming out of vaginas. Tune in. You'll see.
See, Britt, I start to get like an Amy Sherman-Palladino feel from them when they say things like, we have live births, babies coming out of vaginas. So, I mean, take it as you will, but that's very brusque. Yeah. That's very here it is. We're showing it off.
I mean, you could also hear that as just like we're depicting live births.
We're creating live births. Yeah. Yeah. So I will look into this more. I think I'm hosting next week, so we can definitely give an update on it. If anyone, I know we have a lot of really passionate Sense8 super fans who do listen to this. So please point us in the right direction or let us know. Again, this is something I did want to look up beforehand and then I completely forgot. So that's my bad. But yeah, so we'll check in on that next week. Were there any other points that we wanted to bring up about this episode?
I kind of thought Riley almost fell off the balcony.
Yeah. Yeah. The blood coming out of her nose and stuff was very unexpected. Even though I've seen this before and I knew what was going to happen, I forgot about that. Like, I think that struck me more than the actual births. So many blood packs.
Everywhere.
Oh, man. So, yeah, that was What is Human. Again, I'm just going to keep saying this. I forgot about this episode, but I really, really enjoyed it. Cool. Let's move into our favorite scenes and favorite lines before we wrap everything up. My favorite scene, we've talked about it. It's Leto and Wolfgang and the bazooka. Full stop. Favorite scene. Mitch, what is yours?
Mine is the cigarette flick. It's so specific and wonderfully toward the camera. I love how he feels like a badass because he's smoking a cigarette. Pretty sure he doesn't smoke cigarettes.
He just needed the extra confidence here.
Leto, this is.
Yes. Yeah. Caitlin, your favorite scene?
Mine was when Wolfgang taps in to fight for Leto. Like, he gives him his hand and gets him up and then just goes in and kicks ass, and it was awesome.
Yeah. And Brittany.
To break things up, my favorite scene was Will and his dad having one normal moment with the fireworks.
Yeah, it's easy to forget that, I mean, these people do have normal lives, and it's supposed to be about normal lives, so.
I almost had Caffeus and Kala, but.
You know, that's what I was expecting to see from you, so I was a little surprised, but hey.
I know, I said something nice about Wolfgang. Be amazing.
I couldn't believe it. I'm just going to let her talk.
Don't stop this. Don't stop it. All right. Favorite lines. Mine is a small speech, so I'm going to do it really quickly. It's from Leto to the barman. After the barman apologizes to him for kissing him, he says, "Do not apologize. The mistake was mine. I should have told you the truth. This is a stolen kiss because these lips belong to another. And even though you're a very attractive man and your offer to do terrible things to me was effective, I should have told you no thank you because I have already met the love of my life. And his name is Hernando." It's very, very cinematic and very dramatic. And I love every second of it. Thank you, Leto. So good. Mitch, your favorite line is also Leto.
Yeah, from the same exact scene. And I like when he's kind of rambling about the amount of tequila he wants. And he just ends on the statement, "Tequila squared." Like, that's legitimate. I'm just like, okay.
So four tequilas.
Yeah.
Caitlin, your favorite line?
Mine was, "I'm going to go on, continue the pattern of saying nice things about people I have not loved before." But mine was Sun. And when she's signing the deal, says, "I want to believe the past is done with us the moment we're done with it."
Oh, I love that. That speaks volumes. That's really great. Brittany, your favorite line?
Mine is from Wolfgang, who says, "Sometimes you make a mistake. You've got two choices. You live with it or you fix it."
I think this show is becoming more quotable as it's going on. I remember we were struggling in the beginning and I was like wondering why I remembered this show being quotable. And I think it's once we're starting to get into stuff like this, because both the Sun and Wolfgang statements here, I think, are awesome. All right. So we want to know what your favorite scenes, your favorite lines, or we want to know what you think we missed talking about on this episode. So please come contact us. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at re_watchable. And you can also come find us on Tumblr. We're at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And if you have a chance, as you're listening to this on whatever program you're using, if you could leave us a review on iTunes, you honestly could probably just do it in 5 seconds from your little iTunes app. I was doing it the other day with some of the podcasts that I like. But basically, if you rate us 5 stars, it will help us find more people who love Sense8, and we can grow our own little cluster and be a happy family and really awesome. And this week's incentive, if you rate us 5 stars on iTunes, then Karen will tap in when you need to take advantage of her sick acting skills. And also, like, after watching so many really bad movies, like Mortal Kombat, she probably has some sick fighting skills too. So just tap in, rate us 5 stars, and she's got you covered. And also in last week's episode, she mentioned that by leaving us reviews like this, it'll actually help us with Rotten Tomatoes and get our podcast to start being shown on there too. Again, to grow our big happy cluster. So, let's get into our listener feedback before we wrap up for the day. I actually want to take this first one because it's from one of my internet friends turned real life friend, Eric Johnson at Eric Johnson Designs. And about this episode, he said, "Such a great episode. After 2 exposition heavy episodes, this was the one that kicked everything into high gear for the push to the finale. That shootout scene was amazing." Totally agree. Loved that scene. Anything with Leto and Wolfgang, I am down for. Oh, and anything with the bazooka, you know, because bazooka.
Danielle, if you want to give me the next one, I wrote the pronunciation. I don't want to have anyone else feel like they have to trip over it. Sorry to interrupt.
You didn't know how to pronounce Reykjavik?
No. If you do, please take it. That's cool.
No, I want to hear Mitch pronounce it.
Okay.
Go ahead, Mitch. You got this one.
Sure. So this tweet comes from Leah at Leah TA11, and they wrote, "That opening scene from episode 9, where Riley is walking on the beautiful black sand beach, I was totally there at the beginning of August. It's in the town of Vik, about 2.5 hours outside of Reykjavik." And she did have a little bit of a thread here. She also went to the Holocaust memorial that Wolfgang's at here. These 2 episodes that we've seen in there. So the link is perhaps in the show notes. If we want to include it there, I'll leave it up to the show notes writers this week for this tweet. So you can see the thread and the pictures and all the cool little things she's seeing out there in the world.
Yeah, the video was really neat. I had a friend actually who was just there this week. And so I love seeing these videos of that black sand beach. It's beautiful. And I hope to make it there one day. Let's see. Caitlin, do you want to grab this next tweet?
Sure. From your best friend, Stella, at JX Jackson Kills. I finally broke. I couldn't do episodes weekly anymore. The future has really spoiled me. I remember waiting for what felt like forever to get a new episode of Buffy and Angel each week. Maybe I'll be able to just stop at the season one finale and wait for you guys to catch up. Maybe. Though knowing my track record of self-control, probably not. Only time will tell. Hashtag Sense8.
Hey. I mean, that's fine. Just, you do you. It's really hard to wait. I understand.
We'll catch up eventually.
We'll catch up eventually, exactly. And we actually did get some reviews on iTunes, I'm seeing now, which is awesome. Thank you, guys. Brittany, would you like to read this first one from She-Ra Princess?
Sure. So She-Ra Princess, also a regular Twitter interactor, said, rated us 5 stars saying, enjoyable distraction, which, like, honestly, what good better compliment? I would like that on a pin. I am an enjoyable distraction. A longtime fan of Buffy, I recently started listening to podcasts of the show. Rewatchable was the second one I tried and was soon hooked. I admire the perseverance of slogging through so many episodes despite the great lows, yes, and off that offset the great highs of both Buffy and Angel. The vast majority of the commentary is thoughtful and heartfelt. I was occasionally frustrated when someone simply complained that some plot point was stupid and nothing more insightful. Sorry, that's probably me. But those moments were rare. I love to listen while cleaning because I get so distracted by the commentary. No drastic distraction reduction, please. Moving on to Sense8. Wow, that was a mouthful at the end there. I didn't think I was going to get through it.
Yeah.
Drastic distraction reduction.
It was a tongue twister, but you did it so well. So thank you, Brittany. And thank you, She-Ra Princess. And we also have another 5-star review on iTunes from Cody Guff, I think. I'm sorry if I mispronounced that. And the title of it is Love Sense8. And they said, I just recently rewatched season 1 with a friend while she watches for the first time. And we are on season 2 currently. So this is so exciting. So I'm excited that they'll be, I'm assuming, following along with us, which is awesome. Please do. We love this.
Yeah, this is so much fun. And
yeah,
I love this part. Introduce it, Danielle, so we can wrap it up and be happy about what they're saying.
Oh, boy. All right. So it is now time for Brittany's Brainstorms and Caitlin's Conjectures for Sense8, season 1, episode 11, Just Turn the Wheel and the Future Changes. Guys, what do you think?
Well, clearly someone's going to be a contestant on Wheel of Fortune.
Oh, my God. I wouldn't have expected anything else from you, Brittany, but I'm still shocked.
Everything else.
And they're all going to come in and help solve the puzzles, and then someone's going to take the prize money, and it's going to be great. But other than that, I think Whispers is going to start to play a real role coming in, because really haven't seen him in a while, and things seem to have calmed down, but there are also only 2 episodes left in the season, so something needs to pick up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Caitlin? Besides the obvious connection to Wheel of Fortune.
I mean, I think Daenerys is coming in to break the wheel.
Oh.
So obviously we're going to have dragons, and that's going to shake things up.
Is that a Game of Thrones thing? Did she break a wheel at one point?
It was a big line in a trailer.
Oh, an upcoming season. Got it.
It was actually a couple seasons ago.
Oh, okay. So, never mind. I'm not a Game of Thrones follower.
Clearly, we watch all things here.
I do not. I do not.
Everyone,
watch
all things. Oh, goodness. All right. Well, those are some brainstorms and conjectures. And we will find out what happens next. I can guarantee it gets exciting for this penultimate episode, but you're just going to have to wait and see. So we will be back same time, same place next week to talk about Just Turn the Wheel and the Future Changes. But until then, I am Danielle.
I'm Mitch.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Brittany.
Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Bye.
Sorry, Brittany, I think we cut you off. What were you saying?
I didn't say anything.
Oh, it was Danielle then.
It's fine, Mitch. Cut me off. I cut myself off. It's good.